Good afternoon, everyone. Today is Thursday, November 18th, and we are going to call to order the Board of Commissioners meeting for the Housing Authority of the City of Austin, the Austin Board of Housing Corporation, and the Austin Board of Public Corporation. I'd ask Ms. Blanco, it's the time to call roll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chairman Ritchie?
Present.
Commissioner Bailey?
Here.
Commissioner Amendola?
Present.
Commissioner Duncan Hall?
Present.
Commissioner Carrington?
Present.
And a quorum.
All right, we have a quorum, so we're officially called to order at 12:14 on Thursday, November 18. With that, we will see if we have what I'll do is give you a slide from the users. I'll ask Dr. Stoller if you can mind doing this and play for the chair.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The next item is citizens' communication, and no one will find out. And I will just ask again if there's anyone on the internet or in present who would like to address the Board of Commissioners at the time. Seeing none, then we will move on to the public hearing. The public hearing on the proposed at Prado at the South Hill Development.
Any members of the public to provide public comment video if you don't see anyone signed up for that. Okay.
Since we have no one to testify at the public hearing, we will close the public hearing. Let the record reflect that no one notified us or appeared before us to testify on the proposed El Prado and Concia development. The next item is a consent item. First item is the approval of the ordinance from the October 21st meeting. And the second one is the approval of the Board of Commissioners meeting scheduled for 2022. Does any commissioner have any comments regarding either of those that they want to have them pulled off and discussed, or would they would want to proceed and just approve them on the consent agenda as printed? Seeing none, so the chair will obtain a motion to approve items 1 and 2 on the consent agenda.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Carrington, second by Commissioner Costello. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. And we'll go to item number 3.
Actually, Mr. Chair, if we can, let's skip down to item number 8. We do have a representative from Boys and Girls Club for the renewal.
Okay.
So, Ms. Leilani Villegas will be presenting.
So, we will move to item number 8, which is the presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding resolution number 2730, renewal of the Boys and Girls Club contract for Chalmers and Meadowbrook for comprehensive youth development.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Commissioners, top and staff, and Ms. Hendershot. My name is Leilani Limbiega, and I serve as the Senior Director of Community Development. And today we will have a very brief overview of the Boys and Girls Club. As you all know, the Boys and Girls Club were a very pivotal community partner for our youth and our families during COVID-19 pandemic, especially during the snowstorm. And they were one of our major community partners who basically provided youth services and to prevent the academic slide during the summer. And we had a very robust summer youth program for our families. And also, they are one of the only community partners that never closed during the pandemic. So as you can see, it was a very challenging time to pivot, but was there with our team and collaboration, we were able to move forward with the youth youth services along with the women. Today also I'd like to introduce Mr. Robert Fowler. He'd love to come forward. Mr. Robert Fowler is the Chief Strategy and Operational Officer. We have a brief presentation. We'll be here to answer any questions you might have. And so for today, it's our resolution 2730. This contract renewal is specifically for the Boys and Girls Club locations of Chalmers and Medbrook, which is under the Comprehensive Youth Development. And this is separate from the Booker T. Washington one, which was approved by the board through the COVID-19 academic slide during the summer. That's $83,000 for Booker T. Washington. But today, for today's purposes, it is to renew the contract for Chalmers and Meadowbrook for the amount of $114,030. And with that, I'll hand it over to Barbara to provide the outcomes and then to Robert Fowler to answer any questions. Thank you.
Yes, and again, to reiterate that this is for the Chalmers Sport Club and the Meadowbrook Club. And we contract for services at about 50 youths a day at Chalmers Sport and 75 youths a day at Meadowbrook. Although with the virus, we had to have social distancing, so the less students. So it's been more in the range of 20 to 25 students at Chalmers and 25 to 30. And there was a short period of time that we did have to close down the clubs because PACA was not operating at any of our sites. But we were able to continue busing students from Chalmers to the main club, which was never closed. So Robert can talk a little bit more about that. Just to summarize, all of the outcomes were met except for the total number of students served. But in terms of the performance outcomes, 94% of the youth successfully completed a prevention program, 75% of youth reported a decrease in risky behaviors, 100% of youth were actively involved in tutoring or homework help, 20% of parents were actively involved in the program, and 99.5% Boys and Girls Club members successfully matriculated to the next grade. And with that, we do recommend the funding at $114,030, which is the same amount of the contract for the previous 2 years. Do you want to go to the next slide?
Okay. Show me how to do it.
There we go. So why don't you talk a little bit about what's on this slide?
Sure. Thank you. So you can see a breakdown per location of our primary looking at youth served. Majority of those are youth.
Pardon me, sir. 1 second. Just for the record, can you state your name and who you're with? Just for the record.
Sure. Rob Fowler. I'm with the Boys and Girls Club of the Austin area. And you can see the unduplicated youth served. Majority of the youth we served in the last year have been through our Club on the Go program, which we pivoted from our interest and to bring the club to them. So once a week they received a bag with 5 activities that were tied to videos that they could watch on YouTube so they could stay connected to the adult mentors they have grown used to seeing, along with 5 meals and 5 meals. So we were able to continue to serve. We actually served more youth than we had planned because of our model and our pivot. And then you can see the percentage compared to a peer group. So 99% of Chalmers Court Club members compared to 89% of their peer group within their school. So we had a great outcome, a lot of success this year. During COVID, we really focused on that learning loss and prevention. And we wanted to be able to, when the kids returned to school, that they were reading and competing at the same grade level, if not higher. And we were able to meet that goal over the last 18 months.
Thank you, Rob. Are there any questions?
I'm sure they are. Make sure to have a call.
Just one question in regards to the fewer number of students that you were able to serve this year. Given that fact, how do you plan in 2022 to increase that to the level that you have previously served?
Thank you. We have been increasing throughout already in 2021 when we returned to school. So we went from like 17 at one location up to about 24, 25. So it's a steady increase as families are feeling more comfortable to returning to in-person. more families are returning to school in person, and we know, and so we're constantly recruiting, reaching out to our families, just letting them know we're still here, and we continue to service them through Club on the Go as well. They're not comfortable to come back to club at this time. But we see a strong increase over the next few months.
So you're sort of using word of mouth rather than any other kind of outreach activities?
Oh, no. We have a parent email group that we send out weekly resources to as well, and continue with our family engagement nights once a month. We have flyers and a website. So we have a text app reminder to parents, too, that we send out bi-weekly reminder that we're open and accepting new applications.
And part of your program is involved parents as well. Have you, what specific activities have you been using with the parents?
So, sponsored by our parent engagement director. And so we focus on everything from healthy cooking. We actually really worked on a cookbook that we gathered healthy and affordable recipes from our families based upon their needs and interests. And we had a couple of different parent nights where they explored the cookbook, made the meals. We've actually developed a social media class for all parents to have them understand how to use social media so they're able to keep up with their youth and understand how to block things on their youth, age-appropriate social media tools as well. So the theme of the family nights change usually about every other month.
Well, how many parents are able to attend?
We have a really great turnout at our hot locations. I would say upwards of 80% of the youth have one or more parents or an adult in their life that they live with attend the family nights.
Have you considered attempting any type of parent activity in which those parents who either do not speak English as who are not able to assist their children with the English homework or reading, et cetera, where they can also improve their
Yes, so we offer ESL classes to all of our families, some of them on-site. We also offer, at all of our locations, we have a bilingual staff who is able to communicate to the parents as well. All of our flyers, family literature, even our videos are a dual language, so we're able to reach those parents as well. And so we try to eliminate all barriers that we can to working with the families.
But I was trying to get something a little bit more proactive where the parents are actually learning what to do.
So kind of like an engagement, I'm picturing that. I mean, I've done this in the past. I don't think we've done it recently in the last few months, but like a homework help time for students and parents. So we're teaching the parents the homework as well and the dual languages. That's something we can definitely bring back and explore more on.
How is that working now?
It's worked really well in the past. I think one of the benefits of the clubs and the parents really like is that they're able to focus on homework during club time. And so when the youth goes home with the parent, they have some quality time with the parent. And so they're not so focused on homework or academics. We found in feedback from the parents that they like that ability to pick up their child, have the homework done, and then they're able to spend more quality time. And we actually, based upon parent feedback, over the last 2 years, we've done some large parent surveys. As an organization, we had about 3,500 parents complete the survey. About 800 Hakka family members were part of that 3,500 who completed it. They did homework. Taking that off the parents' responsibility plate was one of the top reasons they were attending club.
Two comments. One, we also passed the word around at resident council. We also make the announcement at resident council that Boys and Girls Club, you know, to kind of advise the parents that it's open and they're taking enrollments and such and such. So that's one, another way of giving to the parents, too.
Thank you.
And the parent educators, those are the ones that are helping out, too.
Mr.
Karen,
I thought I heard you say that there was, and just kind of explain this to me then, involvement, that 20% of the parents were involved. Well, what was that number? What did that refer to?
That's one of the outcomes that we have as part of our contract, that and involvement is defined by parent participation 10 to 20 times throughout the contract year.
Okay.
And they meant that.
That we have more than 20% of the parents who are involved, it's this outcome of 10 to 20%.
Right, and then it's this, how many times a year they participate. So a resident, a parent that didn't come 10 times wouldn't be counted as part of this outcome. So this is a higher level of participation.
Thank you.
Commissioner Bailey?
Carl, I'm okay. I don't have any questions.
Pardon? I was just asking if you had a question for...
No, I'm good.
Okay. Robert, let me just say this, and this is kind of a big deal for me to say because I grew up in the YMCA system. But I am really proud of what you all have done through COVID. Because one, staying open and having employees to do the work that you did, regardless of the number of children you were able to adults you were able to connect with, just being open was a big deal in and of itself. And then looking at the numbers before me, you all look like you did a fairly amazing job despite all the adversity that you had to overcome. And, you know, your dedication and commitment to continue to serving through this adverse time. I'm really proud of you all. And this is coming from a YMCA kid who seldom have ever went to the Forest Club. I just want to thank you for your service. I'm glad that we have this partnership and relationship with you all. You all have done a great job over the years, but you really came through in a big way. I think we all have seen the numbers, increases in the number of crimes that have been committed in the last year or so. But I think when you have a kid with a boy or girl, and especially a parent who are engaged in these type of activities, it puts them in a safe place where they can focus on developing their mind and their body in a very positive way to go on to be a very productive citizen. So I just want to say thank you to you and your board. Again, for me to say this is somebody who grew up in the YMCA system, it's kind of a big deal. But thank you very much. Unless anybody else has any questions, I will entertain a motion to approve the contract as presented by the staff. Motion by Commissioner Stephanie Hall, seconded by Commissioner Costello. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Thank you very much for your service, and we appreciate all that you do.
Thank you very much. And if I could just add, when COVID happened, I think we were all kind of paralyzed. We didn't know what to do. And we worked with six different school districts and probably 300 partners. And I really want to say thank you. The first two people who reached out were our health partners. And so it wasn't a matter of what we were going to do. It was how soon can we do it safely and effectively and provide a service. And so I think our partnership over the last year and a half has only grown stronger, and we really couldn't ask for two better counterparts to work with here at HACA, and we're just so thankful for your support and their commitment to serving the youth. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
And there was some Community Heroes Award. I would certainly nominate you for it. All right, Rocco, where should we go next?
Yes, Mr. Chair, at this point we will return back to the action items, and next on the list is item 3, and Michael Ross with the LIH department is here to present on resolution 2725.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon, Commissioners, staff, and guests. We have before us the 2022 calendar year budgets for all 16 properties in our low-income housing department. And staff is recommending approval of these budgets as presented to you. As a bit of an overview, just to highlight some of the changes and some of the things that may be of significant of note to take into consideration with this. First of all, one major change is having to do with Rosewood. We know that there's anticipated major changes for Rosewood next year, so during the budgeting process. We budgeted for 9 years, 9 months worth of revenue and expenses, not the full calendar year in anticipation of that. So when you hear me make reference to percent changes between this year and last year, that is having taken Rosewood out of the equation, just so that we have an accurate comparison between last year and this year. So on the revenue side, every year HUD offers an operating cost adjustment factor. For next year, that will be a 2.8% increase in the rent that we will see, and that is the main source of our revenue, the rent that we collect from residents and directly from HUD. In addition to that, in the budgeting process, we budget for a 3.5% vacancy loss, which is much higher than what we actually experienced. Our normal rate is about 1.6%, and that will afford us an additional $300,000 of, for lack of a better way of saying it, wiggle room if we're at potential expenses running higher than we have anticipated higher revenue from that. We also budget for 2% of bad debt for residents who move out not having to pay the full amount of their rent. And that's pretty consistent with what we perform at. On the expenses side for anticipated 2022, we are seeing some significant increases this year. And particularly in the area of materials, we're anticipating about a 6% increase in the cost of materials. And you can see that reflected, of course, in various issues related to supply chain and inflation, but also primarily in major increases in the areas of contracts, maintenance contracts. We're anticipating an average, a total increase of about 21% in our expenses in contracts. And the major drivers in that are the trash removal contracts, the pest control, also the make-ready contract. And then in addition to that, beyond the regular contracts, we're also seeing a 20% increase in insurance. And this has been an ongoing issue year after year. The others have been this is kind of a one-year major increase, but insurance has been a repeated increase year after year. And it's an issue that I know HUD is very aware of and focusing on. But we're also then showing an increase of about 34% for security for next year. So those are the major drivers of increase in expenses. At the end of all of that, we have an entire portfolio which is still represented as cash flowing. We are meeting the debt service coverage requirements and ratio requirements of our lenders and investors with a total portfolio-wide debt service ratio of 1.18. Individual properties vary higher than that. But on the whole, we present the portfolio is in a strong position, even though we do face some of the challenges of the economic challenges and cost increases. And we come before you recommending approval of this budget, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
All right. Mr. Kerrigan.
Michael, on the increase of security, 34%, is that because we are adding additional security to our properties, or what accounts for that?
I think there's several factors that account for that. First, during the time of COVID, we had significantly increased security at some of our senior sites, primarily focused on the control of limiting the access of volumes of people. And one of the side effects we saw of that is significantly reduced some of the criminal activity and some of the problems we had some of those properties. And so while we can't afford to maintain that level of it throughout the whole calendar year, we are looking at ways to have more than we had pre-COVID at some of those properties. I think a second major factor is we recognize that across the entire city, not just at our properties, there is a significant increase in crime, and that has bled over onto some of our properties. And I would say a significant portion of that is not from our residents. It's from people, coming onto our properties committing those criminal activities. But nonetheless, that means we want to have security there for our residents as well. So that is a big part of what we're seeing from this increase.
And if I can also add to that, Commissioner Carrington, also citywide, we have seen that there has been, of course, a shortage of APD officers. And they're playing catch-up right now with various cadet classes, but it's going to take a while for that staffing level to catch up. And in the meantime, they have had to eliminate certain divisions within their APD department, one of which has been the narcotics division. and their district representatives at program as well, that has been a very key liaison to many of our portfolio properties and residents. So all of that, unfortunately, has had a ripple effect in terms of an uptick in criminal activity community-wide. But in the meantime, we need to ensure that we are continuing to provide a safe living environment for our families. And so thus, we do have to you know, reflect that in additional security measures and more patrols.
Another question.
Go ahead.
On the insurance, have you checked with, have you made some comparisons on what we're paying or what those increases are with what other housing authorities are paying for in the way of insurance?
What we are seeing is across the industry that this is pretty consistent. We've been working quite a bit with NAMA, the National Management Association, and they are seeing similar numbers, anywhere from 15% to 23% across the industry, not just here locally, but across the country. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's rising to the level of the United States right now.
Is that because of their floods and fires?
I can't say that I understand fully what's driving all of this. You know, certainly we could look at this year and recognize that we had some major insurance claims this year, this calendar year, for the winter storm and some hail damage. And between those two claims alone, each one of those was over $1 million in claims. So I understand we're high. I mean, we had a lot of claims this year, but we had a similar increase to last year. We had about 15% to 18% increase last year, and this has been a consistent trend in the insurance industry over the last 5 years.
One more question, I'll put on
the table. No, that's as many as you want.
Have we looked at self-insurance, creating a pool so that we self-insure? Is that too big of a question to ask at this meeting right now?
We have not looked into it. I would say that we could actually do some research on it.
We can definitely explore that. I know that this is, again, nothing unique to, you know, Austin or Hawkins portfolio. I know that Austin Affordable Housing Corporation has also experienced, you know, similar increases. And, again, it's industry-wide across the country. Of course, we did have the unique experience of Winter Storm Uri, which came through and, yes, did quite a bit of damage, as Michael has mentioned, over $1 million worth of damages. And at a relatively small deductible, you know, all things considered, $5,000. So we got $1 million worth of repairs as a result of it. But that then, of course, means there's going to be some uptick in premiums as a result. But we can definitely go back and see what kind of feasibility there is in terms of self-insurance and report that.
There are some nonprofits that do that. So I think the long-term kind of research. But I think it'd be worth looking into, especially if insurance rates are going up 15-20% every year.
And the Housing Authority Insurance, HAI, is the provider. And so it is a school type of provider of housing authority related type of properties. But we can definitely, you know, report back on some due diligence.
Thank you.
Yes, I have some questions about the security. Has staff identified particular properties where you want to increase that security first as priorities? And if so, which one?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, we work with a couple different sources for security. We do work with some private security guard companies, but we also work with office APD officers. One of the things we're doing with our APD officers is the coordinator that we work with is the Office of the Department. We give them the opportunity to have kind of a little bit of extra permission to focus staffing and shifts of officers in those properties where we know we have the highest issues of crime criminal activity, trying to focus that. So while that right now is focused primarily at Thurman Heights, Northgate Department, and Georgia Manor Container, that could shift throughout the year. You know, those three properties are located in similar areas in North Austin that have seen significant issues of crime in that general area, and we can obviously see that also move on to our properties as well. While we're planning for that for right now, we also know that 6 months from now, there can be three different properties. So we have a system set up to allow us to shift around as needed.
Now, some of our properties we house all ECDL, right?
No, not at all.
We don't any longer.
I think what you're referring to, Commissioner, is we did have a unit that was offline at some point in time, and that unit was used as a substation, if you will, many years back. And it was also a location where police officers could come and write up their reports, their logs, things of that nature. Over time, it just was not being utilized. And so we felt it was better to go ahead and put it back online and actually house the family versus it just being left vacant and not utilized. But we continually explore options like that and other types of solutions where maybe we can have a more visible presence. I know that, in fact, we're looking at one of our properties that could maybe offer a unit as a residence for an APD officer in exchange for being available to, and the question would provide some additional security. So all of that can be explored. We have to weigh that against the loss of revenue and also, you know, HUD approval for that.
Right. Well, I was thinking, you know, as one of the major issues in terms of the attempt to increase community awareness and cooperation with the community, that type of closeness might solve that problem for the community as well. And I was wondering, I don't know why I thought we're still doing that. But,
it,
yeah, I think it would be worth exploring.
It's something that we did back in the late 1990s, when I came on board in 97. We did it. I remember pushing for it. But Ms. Hargrove and staff said it started to become underutilized, and it just made more sense to put the property back, put that unit back online for a family. APD then agreed to, I guess you would say, drive through and monitor the properties as part of their routine routes that they would do. So that gave us some comfort level. And also we began to hire off duty officers to help us at various properties. As Michael said, there's been a shift because when I first got on the board in 97, the big issue was at Booker T. Washington. And I remember one of my first board meetings, there was an item on the agenda to purchase tables for BTW, and the resident commissioner adamantly opposed it. Said because it would just provide a haven for people to come congregate and sit there and do their business. And in talking with the police department, when we were talking about, you know, various ways to monitor the property, they shared with us that the majority of the crimes that are committed by people outside of the residence. But the way our developments are set up, it's easy for somebody to commit a crime, let's say, across the street, and then they can line and run through our properties because of the way they're configured. It's just hard for the police, unless they're just on foot, to try to catch them and chase them. Mm-hmm. And so they, you know, that's sort of one of the other issues that came up. But, you know, crime is a big issue everywhere these days. And so, I think Mike and the team were open to different ways to work to resolve it. Obviously, the best way is to have community involvement and participation. But I do know, as the seniors tend to be less likely to want to get out and to be part of a process where they may be exposed. Nobody wants to be exposed to a criminal element all by themselves, but the Ohio family, in terms of residents, over the years they've worked very well together to address, to share information, which I think has helped reduce the amount of crime. And the other issue that I kind of raised early on, I have the board, was the lighting, because to the extent you've got a lot of light on the property, it tends to be a deterrent in terms of crime, because criminals like to act, you know, commit their acts in dark, in darkness as opposed to the light of day. So, Commissioner Bailey, I would invite you to join this conversation, and then I'll turn to Commissioner Apostolo.
Yeah, go ahead, Mary, and then I'll chip in.
Okay. Thank you. I have a concern because I don't know if you're aware, but they're opening a beer garden in between both community centers. It's on the corner of 3rd and Thomas. It's a vacant lot, so we weren't happy when we heard it. We just heard about it last week, and they're setting it up. I think it's going to be open this weekend. That's going to be extra cars, extra traffic of people, extra scooters, people walking out of there 2-3 in the morning drunk. And then if they have bands, well, nobody's going to get sleep. And why is it that they don't consider putting something that would serve the entire community, not just the high-techy privileged, you know, that can afford that, in our community that is filled with seniors, disabled, and children?
Who will be there?
So I have not heard about that, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
It's, I guess, already in the works. So
they're putting up the lights and everything.
Wow.
And what, you know, what frightens us, the elder, is that we don't see any police as it is right now. So how is it going to be, you know, and like I said, the traffic, more cars, more people walking, and then when they're walking home at 3 in the morning. Because we've already experienced that when we have South by Southwest. So, a lot of people are upset about it.
I think if nothing else, it's just kind of like the comment I made earlier, that we recognize that the majority of the issues that are happening on our properties are not happening to our residents, they're happening to things that
yeah, are exactly.
on the property.
Right.
And reflects part of the need for that additional security.
Well, the question that I've got, if you've got zoning, that allows this, are we, do we watch for changes near our properties?
Well, we should be receiving notifications of any kind of zoning changes so that residents, nearby residents can weigh in on those changes. To my knowledge, we didn't receive any kind of...
I did receive a letter, but it was already in the works. As a matter of fact, they were working last night because we had a class at the Community Center East, and they were working putting the lights up and stuff, and getting, they already painted the fence, and I think it would be open this weekend. It was quick. I mean, I got the letter, and it says, you know, zoning for, you know, that could be a shopping center, it could be this, a place of business. It never said on their beer garden, but yeah, that's what it's going to be.
So when, Mayor, let me ask you a question. When did you receive the letter?
I received it Friday, and then I received another one this week.
So you received a letter with a note that there had been a zoning change, but you didn't receive a letter about a public hearing for a zoning change?
This week it did about a hearing, and I think it's coming up.
Well, why don't you share
that with
Sylvia?
If you can share that with me, that would be helpful. Follow-up.
And I think you would want to notify the resident councils anytime the resident gets some sort of notice about a zoning change, they ought to notify, probably if you want to contact on the staff, they can notify the staff, you can contact the city and have that discussion.
Well, it may not be a zoning change, it may already be zoned for that. And I would guess that they would have to do some sort of alcoholic beverage notice. But it's, you know, Austin's a live music capital, so I'm sure there's lots of places zoned for the things that Mary's worried about.
Okay.
Plus, we have beer gardens every other block from there. I'm hearing music from one on 4th Street. Now we're going to have this one. There's two blocks down. There's the other ones on Sessa Childs. Beer breweries, we have them all over the place. So, you know, we're talking about also drunk drivers. You know, and that's a huge community and a lot of children. So it's just...
And what kind of police presence is there?
Zero. We never see any police. They used to come on bikes. We used to see them walking. But it's been about 2 years. We haven't seen anybody.
And that's the type of feedback and comment that can be shared as part of the public hearing, that there needs to be an adequate level of police presence to, you know, account for the potential of, you know, inebriated drivers after leaving. So if you can, Commissioner, share that with me, and we definitely would want to respond for my comments. And hopefully we can find a way to fix the owner so that there's at least some kind of a partnership, some kind of collaboration, and cooperation at the very least with the fact that we do have families that are living, you know, right across the street. And also I thought, you know, one time in our meeting before we moved there that we were supposed to establish some type of communication with the entire community. And, you know, I would think, why did they stop to ask the Hakka community or, you know, Chalmers, what do you think about this? Because the Boys and Girls Club is right here. They're right across the street. Over here is the community center. Of course, the Boys and Girls Club is going to move once West is built in 2 years. But it's just the whole idea that I thought East Austin had a community committee that would allow, tell everybody in the neighborhood, not just by the city of Austin. Sure, and I think you're probably referring to the East of Sarah Chavez neighborhood.
Yes, exactly.
And I imagine that they should be having weekly meetings, even if they're through Zoom, to discuss those types of issues.
Yeah, we already have, like somebody said, we have a meth clinic on 2nd, beer garden on Tolerant 3rd, clinic over here, you know, since you're gone, what's next? A rehab? For drunk? I mean, because that's all we have, our beer gardens all around. And that's all you see, drunk young people.
Are we, is the housing authority a member of the neighborhood association?
Well, Commissioner Bailey, in terms of the housing authority, we do have contact with them, especially with regard to any proposed project. So while we were in the process of developing Chalmers East and South, we did work and collaborate with the East and our Chavez neighborhood group. So I don't know if we're in terms of housing authority, but Chalmers East and South should definitely be considered members of the Cesar Chavez Inquiry Group.
Well, as we're spreading around the city and kind of moving out of East Austin, it seems to me that we ought to always be part of the local neighborhood association, because we're as much the neighborhood, part of the neighborhood as anybody else is. And it may be that in a deal like Mary's talking about, where you just got bar after bar going up, I mean, the normal way the associate, you know, the city council wants to hear from the neighborhood associations, the zoning board wants to hear from the neighborhood. I mean, that's the way Austin's always been. The neighborhood associations have a lot to say. So if we're not part of them, we should be.
The other thing I would add is that we probably probably ought to have a conversation with the district council member for this area, who would have a very strong voice on the council and in relation to the planning commission as well. I think it's now housing and planning is the new title, but council member
Tasha Harper Madison, I think, is the district council member for Peoria.
She's actually council member of NPA, for the Chalmers area.
Okay.
I know she's not planning on running again for re-election, so I'm not sure how plugged in he's continuing to be, but nonetheless, it definitely, I think, does deserve a discussion about it.
And I would not mind going to City Hall and telling them what the residents have told me and how we feel about it. I think we should have, just by courtesy, ask, what can we do for this community that would involve you too? Not just a certain, they're just targeting a certain type of people. And we want it to be a community for all.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and we don't want to be ignored. I mean, that's not why we're putting our properties where we're putting them, not just because, well, we can shut these out here, nobody will care. It's not that way. It's it may have been 100 years ago, but it's not anymore.
Right. With that, let's get back to the item at hand. That's approved resolution number 2725, approval of low income housing department property budget for calendar year 2022. So with that, I will entertain a motion.
I have a
motion by Commissioner Apostolo, seconded by Commissioner Duncan Hall. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Hearing none, the motion is carried. And I guess we go to item number four, which is resolution number 2726. To presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding the operating budget revision for fiscal year April 2021 through March 2022.
Good afternoon, Commissioner.
Good afternoon.
We are here to present the revised budget.
Barbara, you can say your name and
tell me. Good afternoon, Commissioner. I'm Barbara Chen. She's the CFO of the Hawker Hospital. We are here to present the full resolution number 02726 to ask the board approval to revise fiscal year 2021 budget. The budget will be recovered from April 2020 through March 2021. The revised budget is based on the in the full package. I'm going to go through the summary sheet that which is included in the full package. There's a few items I'm going to emphasize. The last items. One is that we received two special grants, special increments from our assistant housing program, our Section 8 program, through the emergency grant money. The total we received over about $3.3 million from HUD to assist, to provide more housing assistance, provide more voucher programs to the housing community. The other one is that we also, because as you know, that in our original budget for our SHCC program, because of the contract renewal uncertainty, so we only budget for 9 months. So we are always back here to ask the board to revise our budget based on to increase 3 months budget before the SHCC department. So overall, we are here to revise our total revenue of $7,326,967. Altogether, that's a combination of our Section 8 top payment and the additional Section 8 and the Section B and the SHCC, the additional funding for the 3 months. Related to those revenue, we definitely have incurred more expenses. Again, the housing assistance payment is restricted. We can only spend the money on the housing assistance payment. So we received a $2,078,028 for the emergency grant, emergency housing voucher program. We are going to spend 100% of the funding, as you can see the correspondence of expenses in the expenses section. And also, we also received another special implement for the forced youth to independent. This is also another funding we received, and we are going to start the program as of January 1st, 2022. So that's we allocated $261,479,000. That's for our health payment, and we're also going to spend that on our housing assistance payment to the house, providing housing assistance to the families. There's also a big one item is $847,000 expenses in the service fee. If you look at that's in the assistant housing emergency housing voucher service. That's also restricted that we can only spend on the special criteria, like we can help the family to pay for security deposits, moving expenses, and also to pay for the landlord incentives. So that's a total of $847,000. That's also restricted. There's a special purpose of what we can spend the money on. There's another big item, another two I'm going to mention. One is our LIH REACT inspection for this year and for the next few months. We are seeing we have incurred quite a lot of REACT inspection due to the contracting cost increase, the material cost increase, all of the employee overtime, all of the cost of security. Everything we are asking for to increase the expenses for $520,000. Another one is it was we have red and program conversion continue activities. Okay, so that's about $170,000. We're asking for the approval for the expenses. Probably that's the, so we are told that overall we asked the court to approve additional $4,198,118 in operating expenses corresponding to the revenue received. So overall we have a net change with the budget revision is total $3,128,000.
Just bought some. Are you still there?
Based on our quarter,
you know, it turned up in Chase
in March. Back in March, the original budget we proposed, our budget we would have a surplus of $5,850,607. Overall, we anticipate that we project that by end of March 2022, we are going to have an overall of a surplus of $879,456. But that also including that the surplus also includes some of the restricted reserves. The restricted surplus we can only spend on the special purpose of the. Based on the restriction, the amount is
$2,339,000.
Question about
it? Yes.
Yes,
Commissioner
Karen. A couple of questions, Barbara. So on the FHCC, this additional 3 months, then because we have already budgeted 9 months, so this gives us a full 12 months.
Correct.
Revenue for FHCC. Okay. RAD conversion expenses. What are those?
We have a RAD department that they mainly responsible all the families. They also working with the Chalmers tenant, the conversion, that move the relocation, all those type of expenses. Including the tenant relocation, the staff, and all the fees we pay for those expenses. So is the moving expenses for those families. That's part of it.
And these were additional expenses over what we had previously budgeted?
I have to apologize that we did not move about to include, so we did budget that one, so that's what we're gathering.
Right. It was a direction.
Yes, yes, it was a direction.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. Thank you.
Now, I've got some questions, Carl.
Go ahead.
I understand why we had missed our total additional revenue because of the COVID grants and the extra 3 months on our SHCC contract. But we missed the ball on some of these things, the $520,000, now there may be a good explanation for the $2 million, but the $800,000, I mean, did we just miss? What caused us to be so far off?
The $520,000, part of the reason is because of the real inspection and also because of we have to hire the contractor, the material cost, the contract cost, everything went up, and especially because all products not about the same time as the winter storm. So we have a difficult, that's one of the reasons the cost. And we are not saying we good. So that's part of the reason, plus that was some kind of unexpected item. So basically that's the main reason why we had, and about the react inspection, we did not anticipate that maybe this year, right?
Well, and Commissioner Bailey, if I can also expand on that, it was also the function of, and sort of the result of the COVID pandemic, staff not being able to go into units as they normally would have throughout the year. And because of the shortened inspection notice requirements by HUD, they only provide 14 days advance notice that they're going to come out to inspect. They did add an extra 14 days in their generosity because of COVID, but overall it is a very compressed time period that we have to get into units after having not been able to go into units as we normally would have and relying on contractor work to help supplement the additional preparation that staff normally take care of. So it was just this perfect storm of, you know, having to prepare in a very short amount of time, plus having come from all of the aftermath of the winter storm repairs, all of that just really did complicate things for inspection prep. I will share those some good news on our most recent REAC inspection. We did score a 91 at Booker T. Washington. But it does take a lot of work and preparation, and it's a very finicky inspection protocol that we have to abide by, and it's also sort of a wild card, not knowing what the inspector is going to hone in on. So we try to cover all the bases, and unfortunately, it has gotten more expensive as a result of a shortage of materials, a shortage of labor, a shortage of staffing. Even temp agencies really, really struggle to get us temps because the Great Resignation is happening, and it's very, very hard to get bodies to actually come out and do the work. So all of that, unfortunately, did result in this price tag.
Chuck, I'll also add that there's not any uniformity in terms of when the inspectors go out. So, you know, one inspector may ding you on something, but another one would be a little bit more understanding. And just going back pre-COVID, before COVID even hit us. And I think, I gave an example, the summer of 2013 and 2011 were very hot summers. We had very little rain, the ground was cracking, and so we had sidewalks that had a hairline pressure. That's not anything we did. It wasn't wear and tear. It just happened, but we got, I remember us getting dinged on that. And so one inspector may ding you, while the other may say, oh, well, yeah, I understand, you know, the weather's bad, you haven't had any rain. Nothing you can do about that. And under normal circumstances, the staff would have saw that. They would have tried to get a contractor out there to fix that sidewalk or hairline fracture. But under these conditions, during COVID, one, the inspections came a lot quicker. Two, again, we're coming off a winter storm. We have in the preceding item that Michael raised was that, you know, we had a, you know, insurance costs went up because of all the damage we have because of the claims related to the winter storm. So it's not somewhat unusual for us to have these expenses, given that we did identify about another $1 million for the claims that we had to get reimbursed for. So it may not be the best answer, but it is certainly the one, I think, in terms of why we weren't able to anticipate that. Again, I think this was just sort of an aberration as opposed to us just missing something.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure that I would be satisfied with the answer, but for COVID and but for the URI and but for who knows what kind of inspectors we're going to get. So that answers that question. And the other one is just a question. I tell me about the $847,000 housing voucher fee, service fee. What is that?
$847,000, the service fee is restricted funding we receive from HUD, from the Emergency Housing Voucher Program. It's restricted use that we can provide the funding up to $3,500 per tenant, that we can use the money, the funding, to assist the tenants find a unit to relocate, to cover their security deposit, to cover their moving expenses, to cover their miscellaneous loss, some small items, and we can also use the money to pay landlord for incentive, because this is the, we target the group of family, homeless family, so this is part provide this extra funding for our secondary program to help the family. We don't know how much we are going to spend this year, but because the funding is available, so we put it there, so we recognize the full amount of the revenue, but we also recognize the full amount as the expenses because,
okay,
like I said,
got it. Okay. Thanks.
Other questions? With that, the chair will entertain a motion to approve item number four, which is resolution number 2726, which is to approve the amending of the operating budget for fiscal year 2021, April 2021 to March 2022.
I so move.
Motion by Commissioner Apostolo. Seconded by Commissioner Carrington. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Hearing none, the motion carries. We'll go to item number five, which is a will be presented by Mr. Garcia, Vice President of Housing, as a presentation discussion and possible action regarding resolution number 2727, approval of the adoption of the revised housing choice voucher program and payment standards. Mr. Garcia, good to see you, and the floor is yours.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Commissioners, staff. I'm here to present resolution number 2727, requesting approval on the adoption of revised payment plan for the housing choice voucher program. And as you know, each year in October, HUD publishes the new fair market rent, and they result of it every year. The last time we approved the payment plan was in July of the past year. We approved it up to 105% of the then published FMR. And this year, I took a look at what the projected 2022 money is for the program, and I did go through that with HUD. There's a two-year projection tool to determine if we could increase the payment standard a little bit, and we came up with 105% would allow us to
provide more opportunities for families a little bit, anyway, as well as stay within our budget and issue about 20 vouchers among next year in 2022, based on the current amount of funding. This increase would result in about a 3% increase for efficiency units, 2% for 1, 2, and 3, and zero increase for the 4s and the 5s, because we approved them last year in July 105%, and the published FMRs for the 4s and 5s didn't really go up much this go around. So I have that for you. I also have the trend report, which you, as you can see, the Boston Home Market has gone up a tremendous amount this past year. In the third quarter report, it indicated that in 2020, the rents went up about 24%. The current occupancy rate at 95.7%. So it's a struggle for families to find units, but we're doing our best, but we also have to pay for our budget. So that's a little bit.
All right, you want to have Karen?
Oh. It's what percentage of vouchers do we get returned because they can't find housing within the allowance of vouchers?
We've been fairly generous with giving extensions. So what we do right now is right out the get-go, we have 120-day search, and then they request an additional 30 days we're granting them, probably at about a 20% return rate, but we're going to go, I will be very flexible in understanding what they're asking for extensions in the market. So we're trying not to, we're trying to give them as much time as it's possible.
I should probably know this, but can these vouchers be used in the ETJ?
Yes. We go out in Flitterville, Manor, throughout Travis County. We haven't had a local with Round Rock, but Round Rock runs very high too. That it's sort of getting to the point now where even the surrounding areas are out of reach. Struggle right now. I did look at the FMR, but we're just right now within the budget. Some of these properties where we have a lot of units, if we did that, would really increase our expenses. Downtown Austin, different areas. So under our current funding, I've got the 22,000 about what we need right now. Now there's vouchers. We'll come back to you if we have more money. We'll look at it if we're social struggles. Increase the more opportunity.
Let me ask you. This is just to cover up the question. So if the Build Back America bill passes, do you have an idea of how much you will get in terms of receiving for vouchers? Or is a number that's been talked about just a more generic number nationwide as opposed to how much we will actually get per
Yeah, I haven't heard about it. Thanks.
If there are no other questions, the chair will entertain the motion to approve item number 5, which is resolution number 2727, to adopt the revised housing choice vouchers program payment interest. Motion by Commissioner Carrington, seconded by Commissioner Costello. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carried. Ms. Blanco, what do you want to do next?
Chair, if this board is amenable to it, if we can pivot and pivot over to the Austin Affordable PFC board agenda, we have a few items there.
And then from the Austin Affordable PSP, we closed that one out. They moved over to Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. So, Chair Carrington.
Thank you. The regular meeting of the Austin Affordable PSP.
Madam Chair, if you can turn on your.
The regular meeting of the Austin Affordable PSC has been called to order. A quorum has been certified. Is there any citizen communication related to this item for the Public Facilities Corporation?
No.
Okay. If hearing none, then we will move to the consent item, which is the approval of the board minutes of September the 16th, 2021.
So moved.
Thank you, Chairman Ritchie. Second?
Second.
Mr. Mary, any discussion? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? One action item for the Austin Affordable Public Finance Corporation, and that is to approve Resolution 00091, which is authorizing the issuance, sale, and delivery of multifamily housing revenue bonds for the development of El Prado at Estanza Apartments, Series 221A, and then taxable multifamily bonds 221B, authorizing the execution and delivery of the documents and necessary area of the financing.
Madam Chair, Commissioners, guests, and staff, today I'm excited to present to you El Prado at Estancia. This property was previously brought to you in January of this year, so that kind of gives you an indication of how long it takes us to get things worked on a new construction deal. We are partnering again with the NRP group, which we're really excited about. We've got two other tax credit deals with them and three PFC deals. They're a very outstanding company and have been a great partner with us. This is going to be a tax credit and bond structure. Austin Affordable PFC will be issuing the bonds in the amount of $48 million. This is a 318-unit property. We have a great mix of 1, 2, 3, and 4 bedrooms. It's very similar to the Harris Ridge apartments that we did with them a couple of years ago. Those 4 bedrooms just fly. They're always occupied, and it's really exciting, especially hearing Lisa talk about the vouchers. We really need those 3 and 4 bedrooms apartments. And we do serve all of our properties. We've committed to the board that we will serve the voucher holders. This one is affordable to tenants earning a 60% area median family income and below. This one is located just south of Onion Creek Parkway, just a little bit north of 1327 in the Estancia Hills County Country Master Development. It's a development that has some really expensive single family homes, market rate apartments right now. We will be the only affordable apartment complex so far. They are also right beside us are going to build a Texas Children's Hospital, which I'm totally excited about. I think there's so many jobs associated with that children's hospital that we can get those people as tenants, and then all they have to do is walk across the street to work. With this property, we, as with all of our NRP properties, we have a pretty huge children's study room. We do provide aftercare programs for them, after-school care programs for them. And then this isn't just a babysitter. This is helping them with their homework and everything, which is so great for those parents that, you know, obviously work from the time they get out of school and are dropped off at our property until the parents get home from work. We've got that time covered, and we're making sure that they do get their schoolwork done. So it's a really good program, and we'll be using the same provider as we do at Harris Ranch.
What's your question?
What?
Loyola.
Yeah, that's small, 8.3 acres,
so we're going to have some green space. In this area, there's a lot of trails, walking trails and green space, so it's going to be a really nice area. Up north, kind of the area, if you're not real familiar with it, if you go north of 35, you'll run into South Park Meadows, which is this huge shopping center, you know, restaurant, big shopping center. Big development with a lot of jobs that people need an affordable apartment to live at. So this, you know, we'll catch a lot of that crowd as well. And I think that's all I've got for you. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Suzanne, who is the service provider that's doing the after school tutoring here?
The CARES team?
No, it's a different one. You know, actually, I have Nick Walsh with NRP. I have called in. He might be able to help me. I can't, off the top of my head, I can't remember what the name of them is.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Yes, the supportive housing, you know, supportive services provider here at this property, it's going to be Community Housing Resource Partners. They are a third-party nonprofit that we work with a lot all across the state of Texas, and they are currently operating the supportive services at our existing NRP HACA partnerships.
Thank you, Nick.
Suzanne, we've been pleased with the work they've done in Harris Ridge.
Yes, very. They've been outstanding. In fact, I've referred them to other properties to you as well.
Tell me, excuse me, this Chuck, tell me again what these folks do.
They are in charge of the after school care, so they make sure that the kids, they help them with their homework and do any type of, you know, social activities with them. They also, you know, in addition to the after school program, they offer like financial literacy classes, oversee the different service programs that we're going to have on the property for adults as well as the kids.
Now, we do this with Harris Branch. Is that what I heard? Same thing at Harris Branch?
Harris Ridge, yes, sir.
And that's an NRP group property?
Yes, it is. That was the very first one we partnered with NRP on.
Now, do we do this with any other of our partners, any of other of our developer partners?
Yes, there are several different companies that offer this service. On Ron's properties and a couple of my office ones, we use, they call themselves the CARES team, and I can't think of what CARES stands for, but they're in charge of the social programs. So that kind of frees up our management team. They don't have to do things. And then on a couple of our other properties, I've got another group, Portfolio Residential Management, that does basically the same thing. And we kind of look at what our population is. If the population is mostly kids, then we need to tailor it towards after school programs and programs on the weekend. We, you know, some of the groups kind of cater to that. If it's just adults mainly or seniors, then we may go with a different company.
And we provide this for all the children or just the children that are within the 60% of?
I'm sorry, Commissioner Bailey, would you re-ask that question, please?
Do we provide this service for all of the children in the properties, or is it just for the children that qualify for affordable housing?
It's all the children in the property, but this property will be 100% affordable.
And Sylvia, I'm sorry, I misunderstood. Sylvia asked if these services were free. They are free to the tenants. We do, you know, have a contract as the actual property. We pay for these services, but to the tenants, all of these services are free.
And then back to my original question, do we provide this service for all of our properties?
Yes. But it may not be the same company, but
right.
We do
I understand.
Have our companies for every property.
So any property that we do as a development with a private public setup will have this as one of the benefits of living at our property?
That's correct.
I don't think we've ever discussed that before.
I don't think so either. This Tyra, this is new to me. And it's great. I'm glad we do it. I just didn't know about it.
Yeah, just as a little background on my tax credit deal, the CDHCA, that's part of them awarding us the tax credits, is there are certain social program requirements that you have to do on each property. And we just found that, like I said earlier, it's easier to get a third party in to oversee this. They can devote all of their time to those programs as opposed to the in-office management staff having to do that. So we found that it works a lot better. And Ron's properties as well, they're not tax credit properties. They are affordable properties, but we do have, you know, what another team on all of their properties as well.
Could we spend some time discussing this in greater detail? Obviously not today, but this is really news to me because it's one thing that has bothered me all along, that we haven't been able to provide these services to these properties that are filling out this portfolio that we've been spending all this money on.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we
I mean,
can.
I thought it was just for our low-income properties that we were doing this. And so, yeah, and I'd like to know, you know, how many, you know, a little bit of data.
Yeah, I can get reports. And usually my management company send me reports on the activities and what they've been doing that month. Some months may not be as robust on the activities, but and you know, we've had a little kink with COVID, but I think we're back to doing everything in person pretty much, you know, social distancing and wearing masks and stuff. But yeah, we can definitely
that I think gives us something to crow about, in that you know, we're saying that we're affordable, but discuss that affordability issue, I think, quite a bit, and the spectrum is quite large, as far as I'm concerned. But if we didn't say we're providing these services for our tenants' children of these properties, then we are, I think, saying something very important in terms of what our mission is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Commissioner, apologies if it hasn't been spelled out quite as clearly to show that, yes, absolutely, there are social services, there are programs that are being offered free of charge to the tenants of these new developments and also of the acquisition properties under Ron's purview. And so we'll be sure to make that stand out quite a bit more on our reporting and at our presentations. But I do know, Ron, I recall him mentioning the CARES team on multiple presentations that they do provide these after-school programs and social programs, again, depending on the population that's being served. But we'll definitely beef that up moving forward in terms of the presentation.
I'd like Tara, to have equal weight with the amenities of the property.
Yeah, if you all want to, at your next program review committee, Suzanne and Ron, they can make a presentation to you and get you the numbers and everything. And I think that would be the appropriate time to do that. You know, I recall Ron talking a little bit about the CARES program, and I just thought it was kind of industry standard.
for her to do whether you live in kind of a luxury property or an affordable property. Mm-hmm. The property managers always try to do something for the resident, to keep them engaged, to keep, because it's a way to, it's kind of like this, you attract the client, and once they're there, you got to figure out how to keep them there because they've got choices. Mm-hmm. And you're going to go, so, you know, that's why you see in some properties you got volleyball courts or pickle courts. There's all sorts of activities mm-hmm. to keep people engaged and make them feel part of the community. Mm-hmm. And so when Ron was talking about it, I just thought, okay, well, that's great. Mm-hmm. I didn't get into it, but I thought, you know, it's just a typical property management stuff. But mm-hmm. how do you keep your residents engaged and liking the property and wanting to do referrals? Because for them, the best referrals is someone who lives at the property and says, and they go out and be your investor and sell the property for you. Again, I think it would be good for Ron and Suzanne to sort of go in a lot more detail. Because I remember, I heard Ron mention the CARES, and again, I kind of listened to it and everything, and it didn't register with me like it did with you. I just thought, okay, yeah, well, they're doing these different activities, but didn't really drill down in terms of what sort of specific activities they're doing for the kids. And what they're doing for seniors, because remember, sometimes the population is a little different. And so, again, you want to have, you cater your programs to your clientele.
Sure. And I just wanted to add, with the rental assistance that, you know, the city, the state, and the county have had, these, the CARES teams, the different program coordinators, they've really been instrumental in helping us get the tenants signed up. So it's really been a tremendous help. We've cut, and some of the tenants have felt more comfortable going to that team as opposed to management maybe, because they kind of feel like they're all on the same level. And so I just, I can't tell you how much we really appreciate those teams out there.
Well, I'm sorry, Carl, go ahead.
I was going to say, there in every legislative session are always bills that are focused on the tax credit program that's administered by the Texas Department of Housing and Community Affairs. And what I've seen over the years is they're more focused on awarding and trying to get points to things that relate to social services. So I think a couple of sessions ago there was one about you get so many points if your property is going to be next to a blue ribbon, a high performance school, whatever the ratings are, because they've gone from, you know, grading from A to F or whatever. But if you had a property that was located or in that school district and they were exceptional, then you got points because the thing is, you're bringing, you know, low income kids into a neighborhood that has really great schools. So over the years, I've seen those type of bills get filed and get adopted. And so there's quite a few of them. Go
ahead. Madam Chair, we'll CRC committee together a presentation with Bob and Suzanne in the future. And Commissioner Bailey, do you have a question?
Well, I've got I'm not, you know, Carl has such a breadth of knowledge that none of the rest of us have. And so he probably understands what's going on better than, but to me, this is a pretty big deal. I mean, if we're providing, all of these services to all of our tenants and, one of the reasons we've gone into this business is because HUD won't, feds won't give us any money for public housing. So we're going into this business to make money. I'm like Tyra. I mean, this is more than making, this is a big deal. And I think we need to toot our own horn a little bit.
Any other questions or comments?
I have one.
Mary?
Suzanne, what school are nearby?
Yes. And actually, I think I put the wrong school. They changed the boundaries.
Oh, yes.
So this is actually in Hayes ISD.
Oh, okay.
Buda Elementary, Barton Middle School, and Hayes High School. Now, with that being said, we are in a limited purpose annexation, which basically means the city controls, like, the land and the zoning and everything. With this master plan community, they have
promised that we will be fully annexed into the city of Austin, or full purpose annexation, within, I believe, 10 years of when they started this. They just wanted to have more, like, residents, the single-family homes built, the multi-family homes built. So we may be redoing the boundaries once that happens, and I think it may flow into AISD.
Any other questions or comments from Suzanne? If not, then do I hear a motion that we approve Resolution 00091, which is for the issuance of tax exempt bonds and also execution of all documents necessary to carry out the transaction.
I have a motion.
Okay. Motion made by Mary.
Second
by Tyra Duncan Hall. Any other discussion? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. With that, we will close the meeting of the. Yes.
So move.
Thank you. Do a second.
Second.
And the time is
1:44.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, we will move now to the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. So we'll be back with front in your book. Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, and the first item of AAHC is to approve the board minutes of the meeting held on October the 21st.
Madam Chair, if Citizens Communications just to ensure that there's.
Thank you, Sylvia. So is there anyone from the public that would like to provide comments on the agenda item for Austin Affordable Housing Corporation? If not, we will close the public hearing. Then the first item is a consent item, which is the minutes of October 21st, 2021. Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes?
I so move.
Mary, motion.
Second.
Tyra, second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The next item on our agenda, and this will be presented by Mr. Colwall, and this is 00194, and this is to facilitate the acquisition of the Agave at South Congress Avenue, cause AAHC's limited liability company to own the development, to cause the owner to enter into an acquisition and development agreement, and cause AAHC or the owner to execute any other documents necessary to facilitate transactions. With that, we will turn it over to Mr. Colwall to present this item.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Commissioners, welcome guests, staff. Two general comments really quickly. I was upstairs more than I was thought I was going to be, but I wanted to share with you that it was 15 minutes ago. We are now proud partner and owner of the Aston at Riverland Ranch, 2222. We just closed that 10 minutes ago. It's going to be a wonderful acquisition with our partners at CDT. We're super excited about that. And to make one quick statement, and I look forward to sharing more to you about the community things that we do with our community partners. One group that has been left out and we haven't talked much about is our partners at Austin Housing Conservancy. They have an incredible team that does these impact programming. We had across our portfolio on Tuesday, we did a call-in Zoom of how to improve and maintain and improve your credit. And it was an invitation to the entire property, all the properties we own with Austin Housing Conservancy. And we had about 75 people join in. We had a farmer's market out at Melrose Trail, which is out of farmers. We had a tremendous amount of, that was on over the weekend. Tremendous amount of people that can get fruits and vegetables and things. We do things, and I think I look forward to sharing some of the things that they provide, not only as a partner and support the housing, but they do a tremendous amount of community engagement and really stepped up the programming out there, and I'm very proud of what they've done. So I'd share that with you before we look forward to sharing So great, but let's talk about the Agave of South Congress. This property, it was built in 2009. It's 195 units. It's located between just west of South Congress and just east of South First on Stafford Lane. It's a partnership that we're looking to do with our friends at Belgrade Corporation. This would be our seventh acquisition with them. I'm extremely excited about this. It's got this great facility. The floor plans are very spacious, large units. One bedrooms are 700 to 800, one is 900 square feet, as you can see on your summaries. 98 two bedroom, two baths, over almost 1,000 square feet, and we have only 12 in the facility of floor, three bedrooms there, 1,300 square feet. Property is very large. They have a tremendous amount of amenities in fantastic shape. Go through there and you can look at the, we've got the clubhouse and the grilling stations and the lounge and all those types of things. They've got a pretty robust amenity package at the site. The purchase price on this property is $53.5 million, and we'll be putting about $11 million now on this property through Belgrade Corporation, and we'll be taking a note back with Freddie Mac through Bellwether. Balance is $45 million. This property will serve 50% at minimum 50% of the units at 80%. Our analysis so far is we are oversubscribed on that, which is a great thing. We're probably closer to about 62-64% right now. We're still finishing it. We're still in the due diligence stages of this, but we're close to getting to the final numbers. But we're very comfortable about the affordability that already exists here. It's a very competitive bid process, lots of people fighting for this one. This was another candidate that would have seen rent $100 a month upon closing by anyone else other than us where we are. Overall, we always agree to freeze rents for 12 months. We also look at providing at least 10% of the units at 60% AMI so we can do a little bit deeper dive on affordability. Price carries that. This property will able to do that, so we're super excited about that. Other than that, again, it's a fantastic property in excellent shape. We'll put a tremendous amount of dollars up front, excess of $1.2 million in replacement reserves for needed repairs down the road. Belmont's proven to be a really good partner with us. This is a property that is owned by a private equity fund. Firm at Denver, California, Colorado, called Front Range Capital Partners. They've been around a long, long, long time, but they only do property. So the last thing I would share with you, and then I'll be happy to answer questions, more details. After post-closing, we are looking to figure out a way where we can bring in our partners at the Austin Housing Conservancy to step in and take a percentage interest of the Belgrade side and bring them in on this deal as well. I think they would be a great partner here and provide, like I said, some great services. We've been trying to get them into a couple more deals, so Belgrade's been gracious we're open to that, and we feel comfortable that we'll be able to do something. And we'll probably give them a six-month window to come in. I think they're ready to go, but I think they've got to get their board approval first. So I just wanted to share with you that this would probably be a third party coming in post-closing with the Austin Housing Conservancy. This should be get this approved. Great schools, Pleasant Hill Elementary, Medicheck, it is Crockett High School. Other than that, we're really excited.
And ACC South Campus.
That's right. There's a lot of employment around here. If you look at the overall map, there's a Home Depot just across the street. There's a tremendous amount of service restaurants and eateries around there that apparently, at our due diligence, we cater to a lot of the service sector in this property already. Like, don't have numbers as far as breakdowns of families and that sort yet, but we will have that prior to closing. But we see more larger families in this property just because the units are bigger. Usually I've presented some deals to you where our one bedrooms and two bedrooms are 600 to 700 square feet, and these are substantially bigger sized units. So we've seen seen some people take advantage of that. This market is rapidly getting extremely expensive. We've got assets all around it that are 100% occupied and are bursting at the seams for affordability. So we're really excited about the market study and that the demand is there for us to preserve this one. There's no affordability in this property, and believe it or not, there are no Section 8 housing vouchers in this property at the time. So we're very excited that we'll be opening that up, and we're going to do our part and try to ramp up a little bit more marketing to our housing choice voucher program and try to help lease that as much as we can. I will say that the minute we get to, we're working on 60-day notices across our portfolio, and the minute we get a notice on any of these affordable units, I mean, within 48 hours, we've got an application signed and ready to go. So it seems like there's a trend getting harder and harder for affordability across the portfolio. So we're excited about this, and they're good partners. They've got a great track record in this, as you all know. So I hope that you will agree with Ida, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you have. And it will be called the Bridge Act. We just don't know what it is. We're going to keep it the Agave, or we're going to talk about that here before we close. But it will be, we will use our own branding of this one as well.
Any questions for Ron?
Yeah, I've got a question. Tyra, you go.
I'm sorry.
Well, I thought Tyra had a question. She can go ahead.
No, I don't care.
Okay. All right. Well, I have just a general question on how do we make our decisions on how many apartments we're going to set aside and how low we're going to go on the rent, the percentage of market value. How do we make those decisions?
So to answer the first question, how many units do we set aside for affordability? That's driven by state law. So we're required to provide a minimum of 50% of the units, or 51% of the units below 80% AMI. So that has
and
to be.
And who? I can't hear well because I'm not there with my forceful personality, and I can't hear everything that's going on. And so, would you repeat that, please?
You said your friends in the Pink Building called the Texas Legislature mandates 50% of these units.
Below 80% AMI.
They have to be below 80%, so it's state law.
And Carl, that law is for the where we have to go in and get their agreement tax deal?
Yes.
That's for property tax exemption purposes. But to take it further on, we always look at, obviously, achieving a higher affordability number. That's based on, the price, based on current rents where they are. And each property is a little bit different. What we've seen and what we've seen across our portfolio, and this will be no exception to that, is even on the market rent side, we don't accelerate rents, which we can max out our market rents as high as we can, as much as the market will serve, but we're always below that number. And so what that means is your AMIs increase every year and those numbers increase, we create additional affordability because we're not raising rents as quickly as the rest of the market. So, and again, that's driven by, a financial model that we use to purchase each property. Everyone's a little different. Some are, maybe we're only serving 55 to 60%. Some of our properties are 95% affordable. So, depends on what our acquisition price is, where the location is, and we have to pay our investor a certain return. I'm happy to say that I don't think we have a property out there that's less than 60% of the portfolio that's affordable. So it's kind of a give and take. It's kind of a trial as we go through the first year and we get in there and we set our budgets and run our rents that way. So there's no set rule or reason or rhyme of how many we do. It's self-imposed. With the exception of that, the law requires that we have to have a minimum of 50% below 80.
And if it's not a tax credit situation, if we're just going out with a developer and to either buying something together with somebody or buying it by ourselves, are building it, and then who makes those decisions? Or do we have any of those?
I think, Chuck, the deal is this is not a tax credit property, but because the developer brought us in so they could get the tax advantage. But
No, I understand that. And that, do we have some where that's not at play? Where the tax credit's not at play. I know we buy properties, we bought a lot of properties. How is that decided?
So all our acquisitions are all the acquisitions that we've done are non-tax credit. There's no tax credit involved in any of these. And those are the properties that fall under state government and code section 392 that outline, you know, those criteria of what qualifies for a property tax exemption. What we do and above and beyond that is up to my partners and ourselves. And this is, that answers your question a little bit, but, you know, when we vet out our partners and we talk to certain people, you know, they got to buy into what we're doing. I mean, and that's why we turn down a lot of deals where people.
Yeah, and that's, finally, I'm kind of getting around to what I was thinking about. If we get on down the road and tax credit's not an issue, so state law doesn't control, can our partners, what do our contracts say? Is it up to us to make that determination? Or once it's made, it can't be changed? Or can you amend it and can our partner amend it to do something we don't like? Is that making sense, Ron?
I think so. I think what you're saying is once we're in it 2 years, can we just automatically flip it and do something different and not adhere to what we agreed to today or tomorrow, I think, is what you're trying to say. And
I think
we have to adhere to the minimum of 50% or else we're in risk of losing our exemption. And the only way we have, there's two ways. This is when we do these acquisitions, HACA/AHC is the general partner and the managing member. So we are on top of these, you know, through our management company and through us. Additionally, we institute audits every year, and we'll be granting those up at a much higher pace this year of every single property in our portfolio to make sure that the files are correct, make sure that the tenants are, in fact, qualified under the affordable program, because we can't risk losing the property tax exemption. I mean, that's the most important thing here, because it makes us be able to drive our affordability and do more affordability having that exemption, because that tax exemption just passes back into lower rents that nobody else can do. So they can't, it's state law, they can't do, yes, you can cheat and try to get away with it, but, you know, as a partner of HACA, it's not going to happen. And that's what we're very careful with who we partner with. And we've never had that problem. And I'd be happy down the road as we get through this year, that we'll be sharing some audits with y'all, and you'll see some numbers. We've got some good things coming your way to show how this is being monitored. So it's kind of...
I think it does. What if we set up a for-profit corporation to buy something? You know, standalone, arm's length, has nothing to do with HACA. But like we do with everything else, we set up a separate corporation. But it's non-profit. Then are we bound by the 50%?
I defer that one to Bill on the phone or Wilson.
Yes, if you want the exemption, you would be.
No. I'm not worried about the exemption. I'm saying we just go out and we buy. We set up a freestanding corporation that's not nonprofit, and we just want to make a lot of money because we're not making money. Like when we bought that damn shopping center. If we decide we wanted to, well, that we may have used our tax exempt status for that. But say we change, you know, we certainly change direction since I've been on this board. And if we decide we need to make more money and we can make more money as setting up some profit deals, can we do that? And if we do that, do we have to, since we're not nonprofit, are we bound by that 50%? Criteria.
So I think you could do that, and you would not have to abide by the 50% requirement if you're not seeking an exemption, but then that for-profit entity would probably have to retain any profits or funds, because you may have some issues if they flow back to HACA from a purely for-profit motivated use.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm just twisting in the wind, going different directions, trying to figure out where we can do best. But that answers the question. Thanks.
I don't think we would do, I mean, while that is an option, but I don't think we'd do that because one of the things is the land on any deal is very pricey. And the tax exemption makes it affordable for us to do it.
Yeah, well, I understand and I agree completely, and I think what we're doing is fine. But when I got on the board, if you'd have told me we would be going in this direction, I wouldn't have believed it any more than you believe we'll go to a profit deal right now.
Right. Makes sense. Any other questions or comments related to this item? If not, then do I hear a motion that we approve 00194, which is to take the actions that are necessary for the acquisition and document execution for the agave at South Congress.
I so move.
Mary moves. Tyra second. Any more discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
Madam Chair, let me just say that I should have said during the discussion part of it, but I noticed both when Suzanne and Rod presented their introduction is very different from anybody else. They always say, I'm happy.
We're glad they're happy. We're happy with them. I think they don't bring those to us that they're not happy with. We never see them.
Yeah.
They want to see our frustrated faces.
They are very happy about the type of work they're doing and the benefits they bring to the house.
Thank you for that convention. Okay, one more item off to the fourth one, which is item three. And this is to execute any and all documents that's necessary to facilitate the development of El Prado at Estancia, to do a ground lease, cause the subsidiary to execute a restated and amended partnership agreement, entered into a development financing agreement, and execute any and all documents that's necessary to allow the consummation of the transaction. And this is resolution 00195. Ben?
Madam Chair,
I wanted to
make sure that I wasn't on mute still. Just a couple of things to add. This is the last time you will see these or this property before we close. We are trying to close on December 6th, which we better because our bond reservation expires on December 8th. I also just wanted to give Nick Walsh a huge thank you because he's worked tremendously on this, a lot of hours and a lot of hard work. And that's what I really, really appreciate about NRP and our partnership is not only has he worked so hard, and I know he's working on other deals, but if I ever have a question, he responds immediately. He picks up my calls immediately. So that's what we look for in our partners, and we do appreciate it. And I would be happy to answer any other questions.
You know, I'm at the beach, so I got time to think about a lot of different things and like going back out on the patio and sleep. But the question I've got is in the item title, we're agreeing to amend and restate an agreement. Why is that unusual? Is that something that is particular to this particular property?
Hi, this is Bill. Sure, that is a That is a common occurrence on every tax credit transaction. Just to get the partnership formed, it'll enter into kind of just a plain vanilla limited partnership agreement. And then once the transaction closes into its construction financing at the point that the tax credit investor steps in, the partnership agreement is amended into the form that's acceptable to that tax credit investor and provides the terms on which they will provide the tax credit equity.
Yeah, it's probably been everyone we've seen since I've been on the board. I just first time noticed that.
Sure,
but that makes sense. That makes sense. Thanks, Bill.
Yes,
any other questions or comments? Okay, thank you. Mary?
Out of curiosity, where did El Prado come from?
El Prado, when NRP was looking at the location of the property and everything with Estancia, El Prado kind of blended with it, and it means, I believe, prairie. And because there's so many trails, walking trails and stuff around, they thought that was a very
appropriate.
Yeah, and it just sounds really nice.
Well, it's my mother's maiden name, and that's what it means exactly.
Prado. Any other questions or comments?
Used to be a U.S. attorney named Ed Prado.
Probably a cousin.
I appreciate the fact that you all tell us how many times we've seen the development. I know we talked about this about a year, year and a half ago, because we look at so many of these. Every meeting, we're looking at least one, and I know I would say sometimes, have we seen this one before? So it's really helpful when you look at the write-up, and it's like, okay, you saw this when, you're going to see it one more time. And so I find that very helpful to put all of these in context. So thank you all for doing that. Questions, comments?
Comments.
Yes, ma'am.
A press question. If we were to take a tour of all the properties that we have improved in the last 2 years and spent an hour at each property and also include travel time between properties, how many days would it take us?
A week?
Probably about a week.
I'm
going to
pack you a
sack lunch.
If you
back. Yeah, definitely. It'd be at least
7 days.
I
think that's a great idea. I would love to.
But it seems like you should just have a week's vacation tour and you spend the night at, I guess we should spend the night at the properties, right?
I don't have anywhere to put you or
point.
Yeah, they're all in no bed to put them in.
No vacancies.
No vacancies.
No room at the end.
But we can certainly schedule some things over time and, you know, do south one day and maybe do north the next week or and make it convenient so it's not overwhelming. But I just think it would, Stan and I talk about this all the time, and you guys have approved and very interested. Obviously, you're the driving force to what we're doing, so. For you to see what these projects look like, especially the new construction sites, but to walk into some of these, like we're talking about the child care facility, go see what's going on there. Go to the park at Summers Grove, where we got, you know, 200 little, or Valente, where we have 200 little kids kind of running off the bus, you know, and running to the community room. And just see the properties and see the conditions they're in and unannounced. And we can do that. We'd love to do that, you know, and you.
That was the last time.
So you haven't had a chance
to.
And I think COVID has certainly impacted that.
That's exactly why.
And I think, I guess, gosh, it's been almost 2 years, Ron and Suzanne, since you said, let's go out and look at some property. So that's at least 2 years.
Right.
And we did have a board meeting out at Asher, Bridget Asher once. We would like to, start back to that at least 2 years.
Yeah. But no, we need to do this. I'm just totally overwhelmed.
Any other questions or comments?
That's all I had.
None? Then do I hear a motion?
I move to close.
Carl moves. Second?
Second.
Mary second. Any more discussion? If not, then all in favor of approving resolution 00195? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. That ends the business. Affordable Housing Corporation. Mr. Ritchie, let me hear that out. Is there a second?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. We will adjourn the meeting at 2:14, and thank you all very much. Back to Mr. Chair.
All right. We are
behind
schedule. No, I am trying to endeavor to get out of here by 2:30. I'm going to meet Mr. Middleton at a storage unit that I have. I have furniture, so she can accept it, see how to get it out of the storage unit, and donate it to families who are moving from Rosewood and going to other places. And so I'll take this opportunity to make an announcement. If any of you all have any excess furniture that you'd like to donate or think about taking Goodwill, contact Ms. Blanco. Because there are families who are moving out of Rosewood into other development, and they already need a furniture. So I'm donating artwork and my daughter pictures she drew when she was in high school or to college, in addition to some really nice furniture that she don't want to use.
When did this end, collecting furniture and things? Because I can ask at Chalmers East and South.
Oh, so, Commissioner Abdul, yes, Tiffany Middleton has been working with some of our residents who may need some additional furniture as they start their temporary relocation. So it really just kind of depends on probably January, February timeframe as they, move out one by one.
I'll let everybody know, either resident council or the newsletters. Because there's a coffee table where the dumpsters are. Nice coffee table.
Appreciate that. Thank you, Commissioner.
That was the one thing I was going to suggest, is that in the future we put the announcement, if people want to donate clothes, whatever, people are transitioning, so that people will know. Like when she just said it, and I just happened to be, I had the conversation, so it just came up and said, oh, by the way, I can use that. So I think we ought to just think about in the future making an announcement to in the newsletter and work on that stuff as well. People like to buy new things and decorate and answer home looking to get rid of stuff. So.
And I have a bag of clothes and a trunk that I was taking a Goodwill. Okay. And I've got items that, I just go through everything once a year. I'm not going to use, so they're in the trunk too.
Okay, so we got it. Thank you, Commissioner.
All right, so with that, we'll go to item number 6, which is Mr. Kowal. This is item number 2728, which is to take action regarding the agave at the South Congress Apartment. We've taken action on this on two occasions within the last 30 minutes. So I will ask for a motion to approve item number.
Didn't show up at picture and do that. You know that pilot apparently left the speaker issue, and he finds that his co-pilot is in.
If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 The motion carries. We'll go to item number 7, which is resolution number 2729,
regarding the construction for the El Prado at Estancia, not construction, but the acquisition. Mrs. Workman presented this. We voted on the trial. The chairwoman came to motion to finally approve this. Motion by Commissioner Costello, second by Commissioner Carrington. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. And I believe that's it. We've already taken up item number eight. I do want to make a announcement. Mr. Gerber has been serving as our CEO as well as the CEO, interim CEO for NARO. The search for the CEO for NARO ended without them selecting or presenting any candidates to the Board of Governors. So they're going back out for the search, and so Mr. Gerber is willing to serve, continue in dual roles until March 31st, provided the board is okay with that.
And if we say no,
you say no, then they've got to go find somebody. And in my conversation with them, I did not make a commitment that this board would sign off on that, that I would present it to the board. It's something that we ought to, it's something I want you to think about because it's not an action item on the agenda. And right now we've given it to December 31st, but if we want to extend it, we can prove it at the next board.
Oh. So we take no action at this board.
Right.
A comment.
Sure.
I think when this process started, they were initially hoping, maybe NARO were initially hoping that the end date would be October 31st, I think.
Correct.
And it got extended to December 31st.
Correct.
And now it's potentially extended to March 31st of
Correct.
Next year.
So I will tell you, the initial target date was very optimistic. It was tied to trying to get somebody on board for the NARO National Conference meeting, which was going to be in Phoenix, which was going to be early October. When they realized we're not going to have an in-person conference, then they agreed to slip the date, because realistically, I was chair of the search committee, co-chair, went along with it, but I didn't think realistically you can advertise for 2 weeks and get the quality of candidates. And in my humble opinion, we got some great candidates, but I think it was just too short. And there were some other, let's say, personality issues unbeknownst to the candidates and to us that kind of played out that kind of derailed the process. So it did get moved to, he got extended. Mike said he could stay on to December 31st, thinking that we would have somebody on board by December 1st, because he was going to help them on board. So that was part of it, because the one person said they could start, it would be December, I think it was December 6th, if we had selected him. But Mike had agreed to stay on to help that person on board with the staff and everything, because they're still kind of working remotely in D.C. So Mike said that he was asked the board, he thought he could do it. He didn't think that his duties here were, his ability to do both was being detracted from his responsibilities here. But I said that, in fact, we had met with a new search firm, and I said, if you don't think you can meet that time frame, I need to know now, and it would be better for us to go and find somebody different to be the interim CEO, as opposed to getting to February or to March and saying, we're not going to get there. They assured me, I think the timeline is very realistic, because they think during the holidays, people have more time, people are thinking about it, and people will have be in a better position to make decisions in terms of moving, because given the time frame, we did the search, people, 98 candidates applied. but a number of people backed out because they just didn't think it was enough time for them to figure out relocating family and getting all those decisions made within a two-week period. They had to complete the application and prepare to go. So it wasn't a perfect process. I was very disappointed how things played out. But so I'm here to ask if you all would be willing to do something. Again, it's not something that's guaranteed, and it's something that you all think that, hey, look, we've already given, and we've given enough, and that's certainly the prerogative of the board.
Well, my reaction would be if we consider Mike as the stuff that he cannot do the job, full justice with him, if he's willing to continue on to the 31st, I have a problem with that. I see a very problem trying to find somebody else in the interim position for 3 months, especially given the time here, and especially if I go out and try to find a search firm to do the job. So I would go along.
I think that we're extremely fortunate at Honka that we have such an exceptional staff that can carry on and do their work and do it very well when Mike is giving it the office, the NARO office. And, you know, I think we all voiced that confidence in him and in the staff when he first broached this with us several months ago. But if it's after March 31, I mean, this is wearing really thin. And it's probably wearing very thin on some staff, too. And I know we're not voting on it, but I'll go on the table and say, when March 31st comes, he's ours again. So I just worry about him spreading too thin and burning himself out, and then maybe not getting the attention that staff needs.
Well, I agree with that, and also he has his concern for his health. That's a lot to be from one person. So, 31st of March should be the last.
And there is this holiday break that will cut into that. You know, usually after the holidays, you blink in the summer. So that was one thing I was thinking about too. But I neglected to mention the fact of staff. I should have said that first.
But thank you, Sylvia.
Yes.
You did great to me.
Yeah.
Okay. So with that, I don't have any other items for discussion. As we all know, Mike is out. Personal leave for family business up in New York. So I will wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving. We'll see each other next month. And in the meantime, if you all have anything that you want to donate to the families who are moving, transitioning from Rosewood, please give them this Blanco. And with that, I will entertain a motion. And in summary, that Mr. Caldwell and Ms. Swertner will make a presentation to the next program review committee for all the different services that are offered out there.
And that probably will not occur until after the first of the year.
Soon. I was thinking next month.
I think that's too soon.
I think they already have the information system, matter of fact, is it for you? Yeah,
make that effort.
Yeah.
We've never turned down a challenge.
Well, we're going to have a program committee next month. Well,
I just thought it was holiday Christmas. I just meant we're bound
to
be here. Okay, well, we'll do it there.
Yeah, it was January is a questionable week, right? Yeah. So next month we have to be, because we have all those plans that have to be approved.
That's correct. Commissioner, we do have the annual evidence plan, the health and choice option program that needs to be, and also the annual plan for the agency. And Commissioner Duncan Hall, yes, January 20th is noted as optional for 2022. optional. It doesn't mean that it's...
Well, I'll leave it to Ms. Blanco. Rather me trying to manage the agenda, I'll leave it to her. To manage the agenda.
Yes, but whatever the next meeting. But I wouldn't, at this time of year, I wouldn't be like playing half the book.
We'll do it in calendar 22. Yeah. Early 22. First quarter.
Okay.
First quarter.
All right, so with that, we'll move the chair and hand a motion to adjourn.
Did we do this meeting schedule and all that?
Yeah, we proved it early on.
It was on consent.
So motion by me, by Commissioner Kiernan, seconded by Commissioner Costello. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries, and we are adjourned at 2:29 on Thursday, November 18th.